and welcome to Background Briefing, available 24/7 at backgroundbriefing.org. I'm Ian Masters, and today we'll look into a number of stories and issues in the news. We'll begin with the bipartisan bill introduced in the U.S. Senate today by Senators Corker and Kaine to replace the AUMF, the Authorization for the Use of Military Force. Elizabeth Goitein, the co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center, who was previously counsel to the chairman of the Constitutional Subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee, Senator Feingold, joins us. We'll discuss her article at Defense One, "The Corker-Kaine Bill Would Codify, Not End, the Forever War," and how the Congress, which under the Constitution has the sole authority to declare war, would flip this constitutional power on its head, allowing the president to declare war against any enemy anywhere while leaving Congress only with the power to undeclare that war. With a president under siege from mounting domestic scandals, who might strike out and start a war as a distraction, whose closest advisor is an eager warhawk, a conflict could easily erupt with Iran and be justified under the Corker-Kaine AUMF. Since Iran's Revolutionary Guard Corps are already designated a terrorist organization, and they are also sheltering al-Qaeda leadership, including bin Laden's son, under the Corker-Kaine bill, that would be twice the threshold needed to start the next war. Then we'll speak with Lawrence Krauss, Foundation Professor in the School of Earth and Space Exploration at Arizona State University, who is on the board of the American Federation of Scientists. He joins us to discuss the close vote of 50-49 in the Senate today to confirm Trump's pick to head up NASA, a Republican congressman from Oklahoma, Jim Bridenstine. A global warming denier whose previous experience was running the Tulsa Air and Space Museum into the ground, he will take over a $20 billion enterprise with 17,000 employees, many of whom work on earth sciences projects that measure the effects of global warming. Then finally, we'll examine the role of Trump's shadow chief of staff, the Fox News propagandist Sean Hannity, who, according to a presidential advisor, basically has a desk in the White House. Hannity was recently outed as the third and only client of Trump's embattled lawyer Michael Cohen, and Adele Stan, a weekly columnist for the American Prospect, joins us to assess the distortion of the media landscape by the big right-wing outlets like Fox and Sinclair. We will discuss the extent to which they are propping up the Trump presidency with a bodyguard of lies, and her latest article at the American Prospect, "Our Media Problem is Bigger than Sean Hannity." And joining us now is Elizabeth Goitein, the co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, which seeks to advance effective national security policies that respect constitutional values and the rule of law. Previously, she was counsel to Senator Feingold, chairman of the Constitution Subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee, and she has an article at Defense One, "The Corker-Kaine Bill Would Codify, Not End, the Forever War." Welcome to Background Briefing, Elizabeth Goitein.
Thanks very much for having me.
So is that to say that this new bill introduced yesterday by Senators Bob Corker, Republican of Tennessee, and Tim Kaine, Democrat of Virginia, is it some kind of a wolf in sheep's clothing, or is it just something incredibly wrong with the idea that you're trying to reform something that is troubling and you come up with a solution that may be worse than the status quo?
Yeah, I think the issue is that Congress feels left out, and it should, because Congress has been sitting by the sidelines for 17 years now, while the presidents who have been in power during this time, and in particular Presidents Obama and Trump, have relied on the post 9/11 authorization to use military force against al-Qaeda and the Taliban to basically go to war against groups that didn't even exist on 9/11. And Congress has sat by and just sort of let this happen. And I think there's this feeling that Congress needs to do something so that the wars that the president is fighting right now have some kind of statutory authorization. But there's an aspect of this which is sort of like Congress saying to the president, well, you can't fire me, I quit. Because essentially what Congress has done is put its own sort of lack of authority over war making into a statute a statute that gives the president the ability to decide who we're fighting and where we're fighting them, even though the Constitution actually gives that power to Congress.
So what happened to this sense of their prerogatives? I mean, one of the problems we have, I think, at the moment is we don't really have an effective separation of powers because the Republican Congress are so much enablers of President Trump. They're defending him, particularly on the Russia inquiry, etc. But even so, you still hear occasional kind of indignation, and the most recent of which came out of this bombing of Syria. And I believe that the Secretary of Defense, who argued strenuously against Donald Trump and his new national security advisor, John Bolton, who wanted to bomb the hell out of Syria, and the Secretary of Defense wanted to narrow it down to something like a symbolic use of force or a cosmetic use of force, because he was afraid if you kill one Russian, you could start World War III. But in the course of arguing with both the president and John Bolton, apparently the Secretary of Defense also wanted to involve the Congress. So, again, it's very strange that the Congress has complained a lot, but when they get an opportunity to do something about it, they seem to defer to the president.
Right. Well, I think there are some measures in the bill that are meant to provide some degree of limitation and oversight. The problem is, in practice, they're really not going to work very well. So, for one thing, the bill says that the president can designate new enemy groups, terrorist groups, and groups that are associated with the current groups that we're fighting, such as the Islamic State. So the president can designate new ones, but the bill says that the president cannot designate a nation state. And presumably this is meant to deal with things like essentially going to war against Syria or Iran. Unfortunately, it's just very easy for the president to get around that, because all of the countries that the president might want to designate are either state sponsors of terrorism, or they have active terrorist groups operating within them. So it's extremely easy for the president to bomb Syria or bomb Iran and to say, well, actually, I was targeting the sort of terrorist elements within these countries. So it's not much of a limit in practice. There's also something in the bill that allows Congress essentially to pass legislation disapproving any expansions that the president does. But, you know, Congress doesn't have to give itself permission to pass a law. Congress can do that at any time. The point is that, you know, the Constitution doesn't say that the Congress gets to disapprove the president's declaration of war. It's the Congress that's supposed to declare war in the first instance, and this flips the constitutional responsibility. So instead of Congress having to say, by a majority vote, okay, you can go to war, instead, Congress, by a veto-proof majority, has to override the president's decision to go to war, and that's the framework this bill sets up.
And that's probably not going to work if there's a situation where the president or the national security community is saying there's a clear and present danger or something has to be done. It's hardly unlikely you get that kind of override.
That's right. I mean, I think, you know, it's one thing for Congress to simply not grant authorization to go to war against a particular enemy in a particular place, which is, you know, frankly, what Congress has been doing this whole time, is not granting authority. It's another thing for Congress to affirmatively pass a law prohibiting military force against a group that the president has said we need to use military force against this group. I think that becomes politically very dicey for lawmakers, and it's certainly never going to happen by a veto-proof majority. So it's the supposed oversight or protections in this bill are really illusory.
And it's obviously, under the Constitution, war may only be declared by Congress, and we're talking about this bill, the Corker-Kane bill, which is officially titled the Authorization of the Use of Military Force of 2018, and the AUMF, as it's called, is really what the issue is here. And given what happened, though, with the Iraq war and how the Congress people and the senators who voted for that war, particularly, you know, Hillary Clinton, John Kerry and others, were certainly haunted by that vote. So is that a factor here in the extent to which they're basically ducking that kind of responsibility if things turn bad by this sort of half-hearted attempt to assert the authority of the Congress?
Yeah, I mean, that's a really good point. I think Congress feels that overall it's safer politically to let the president make the decisions about whom to fight and where to fight them. And if the president makes those decisions, then the consequences are him. At the same time, if, you know, the American people feel for whatever reason that the president should have gone to war but didn't, Congress can say, well, it wasn't our fault. We gave him all the leash he needed. And so either way it goes, Congress can say, well, it wasn't our responsibility. Either, you know, well, it was the president who designated that enemy, or, you know, the president could have designated that enemy and probably should have but didn't, and that was still the president's fault. So, yes, I mean, it is a way to pass the buck for one of the most sort of politically sensitive actions that Congress can take.
So is that why they're basically giving the president the authority to go ahead with endless wars against nameless enemies, but leaving the Congress, as you write, with only the power to undeclare it?
Yeah, I mean, I think, you know, I do think that the intentions were good on one level. I think the intention to sort of not have Congress be a sort of silent accomplice as such, and to really have make sure that the actions the president was doing were on statutory footing, as they are supposed to be. Congress is supposed to authorize military activities. I think that was the driving force behind the legislation. But again, there's a big difference between Congress reasserting itself by actually defining the scope of the war and Congress writing legislation that gives the president the power to define that scope, because that isn't Congress reasserting its authority. It's Congress abdicating its authority. And putting that into a statute is no better. In fact, it's worse than the sort of abdication we've seen over the last 17 years of Congress sitting by and letting it happen.
Well, of course, the last 17 years is America's longest war in Afghanistan. And what were they talking about in terms of a sunset clause?
There's no sunset clause. What there is a periodic requirement every 4 years that the president has to submit a report to Congress proposing to either continue the AUMF in its current form or modify it in some way or repeal it. The president will make that proposal. And then once again, Congress has the option to pass legislation, presumably again by a veto-proof majority, to do something different than what the president has proposed. So really it's the same framework. It's the president's decision how long the war should go, and Congress can muster a veto-proof majority to end the war if it wants to try to do that. And it's the same dynamics, the same politics. I think there's extremely little chance that you can, only in the most extreme scenario you can imagine, would Congress actually exercise this option. So it's the illusion of oversight and limits when they don't actually exist.
So what was Senator Chris Murphy, the Democrat of Connecticut, arguing about when he said, I'm willing to have less tactical and geographic limitations as long as there is a sunset?
Well, there was originally a bid to try to have a sunset in this legislation. That was compromised away. So what was originally going to be a sunset became this four-year reporting provision that is, you know, no kind of sunset at all. So that was something that I think Senator Murphy wanted, and it's something that didn't end up in the legislation. So, you know, we'll see. I mean, unfortunately, I think a lot of people might be fooled into thinking that this four-year reporting provision actually provides some kind of mechanism to intervene and to actually end the war. But again, the onus really needs to be on the other side. It needs to be, an affirmative action of Congress to continue the war rather than the president's decision, which Congress only has the power to, essentially veto.
Well, just looking at the landscape in the Middle East, which, as we know, I mentioned America's longest war in Afghanistan, which was in response to 9/11, and then Bush-Cheney et al. got into the Iraq War, and that's completely unhinged the Middle East and turned it into a roiling mess where hundreds of thousands have died, $6 trillion of treasure has sort of gone into the desert sands, and countries have been wrecked and ruined, and Iraq's a total mess. And the only winner of the Iraq War, arguably, are the Iranians, and they are now moving into Syria, and Russia and Iran and Assad are getting close to some kind of victory there. But this is also bringing, I think, Israel further into it. And a lot of analysts suggest that a major war between Israel and Iran is brewing because of the fact that the Iranians are now getting close to the Golan Heights, in effect. So when you have a president who wants to tear up the Iran deal, you have a national security advisor who absolutely has been on a tear about going after Iran. You have the Secretary of Education's brother, Eric Prince, the founder of a mercenary army, already in the Gulf, ready to go to war or start a war. Wouldn't take much to start a war with Iran, with their little speedboats running around in the Straits of Hormuz. And the president himself has complained about those Iranian speedboats being rude to our beautiful warships. And then you've got the new Secretary of State, assuming he's confirmed, extremely hawkish on Iran. So let's apply this bill to the idea that there are a lot of people in this administration that would like to go to war against Iran, and all of the other wars that I talked about, Afghanistan and Iraq, that we've been involved in lately, and no question the American people are war-weary, that would be like a picnic compared to a war with Iran.
That's right, and I'm very concerned that nothing in this bill would prevent, and in fact, this bill could very well be used to engage in a war in Iran. The Revolutionary Guard in Iran is a designated terrorist organization. All that the president would have to do is to decide or to determine that the Revolutionary Guard is associated with Al Qaeda, and that is there's nothing in the bill that in any way provides for any kind of review or assessment of the president's designation, other than Congress passing a law to say no, you're wrong. So if the president makes that determination right away, he is authorized under this bill to use military force in Iran. And at that point, 48 hours after that, he has to notify Congress that he's done that. He can wait for 48 hours. And then, Congress can pass a law by a veto-proof majority. But there's a lot of reason to worry that, yes, absolutely, we have rarely seen an administration populated at the highest levels of decision-making in matters of war by such a hawkish and frankly, warmongering individuals. And so, we have a national security advisor who is absolutely spoiling for a fight and has argued in favor of preemptive strikes in Iran. He has the president's ear. We haven't even mentioned the fact that this president is obsessed with nuclear weapons in a way that's really quite chilling. And Congress is poised to hand this president a blank check to expand war again to enemies of his choosing. And it seems so deeply ill-advised, and it's hard to figure out what's going on in the minds of these lawmakers.
Well, I have to add to what I was just mentioning there in terms of the array of forces at the highest levels of this administration who want to go to war against Iran. You have to add the fact that MBZ, the head of the Emirates, is spoiling for a war and has a lot of influence in Washington. And MBS, the Crown Prince of Saudi Arabia, who's about to be king, is absolutely obsessed with wanting to go to war against Iran. And he has enormous influence over the Trump administration and its envoy for Middle East peace, Jared Kushner.
Yeah. You may have noticed that this president has a lot of legal and political troubles at home. If he's looking for a distraction, from those. A war is a tried and true method of distracting from sort of domestic problems at home that an administration might be facing. So there are so many incentives, so many opportunities right now around the world that could tempt a president who is interested in war to go to war. It's a very combustible situation, and it just feels to me like Congress is sort of ready to sort of put a lit match to this very combustible mix.
Well, just in closing, in terms of the idea that really this Corker-Kaine bill does nothing to curtail endless war against nameless enemies, and you mentioned Iran, the IRGC, Revolutionary Guard Corps are already labeled as terrorists, so there you have the threshold met under this new bill that's supposed to restrain the president and give the Congress more input. And you have to add to that that Al-Qaeda is also linked to the IRGC. Bin Laden's son is being sheltered along with other Al-Qaeda leaders by the Revolutionary Guard Corps in Iran. So there's prima facie excuses there already. They exist.
Absolutely. And the administration has been trying to make that connection between Iran and Al-Qaeda for a long time. So it would not be very surprising at all to see the president designate IRGC as an associated force, co-belligerent with Al-Qaeda. And right there, you have the legal pretext for a war in Iran.
Right. And if Israel and Iran are already at war, the temptation would be almost irresistible, I would think. So I thank you for joining us, Elizabeth Goitein.
Thanks very much for inviting me.
And again, I'm speaking with Elizabeth Goitein, who is the co-director of the Liberty and National Security Program at the Brennan Center for Justice at NYU, which seeks to advance effective national security policies that respect constitutional values and the rule of law. And previously, she was counsel to Senator Feingold, chairman of the Constitutional Subcommittee of the Senate Judiciary Committee. And she has an article at Defense One, "The Corker-Kaine Bill Would Codify, Not End, the Forever War." We can take a brief station break and back discussing the close vote of 50-49 in the Senate today to confirm Trump's pick to head up NASA.